Baruch Hashem, we're all sitting here, Hoshana Rabbah by night. And Hoshana Rabbah literally means the great Hoshana. So we know we say a lot of Hoshanas. Tomorrow morning we go around the Bima 7 times, we say Hoshanos, and then we say a long section, and then we bang the Hoshanos on the floor, which is a minhag that's quoted in the Gemara. Toda Rabbah. Let's take a look a little bit at what Chazal taught us about Hoshana Rabbah by night. And we aren't starting with the earliest sources. We aren't starting with the Gemara. But we'll start with the tour and work our way through the Shulchan Aruch and the Levush. And we'll begin with the Minagim of the night. And then later on we'll get on to what Yechezkel brought up with the Halachot, a little bit of the laws of Sukkot for Hoshana Rabbah. So the tour begins Biyom Chamishi Shechol HaMoed Shu Hoshana Rabba, on the fifth day of Chol HaMoed, which is Hoshana Rabba. We have the custom that we say a lot of Mizmorim in Shachris. Tomorrow morning they're going to have the Psukei Dezimra. It's going to be like Shabbos Psukei Dezimra, like Yom Tiv. And we say Kedusha Rabba by Musaf, and we have more candles. They light up the shul in ancient times, even though by day they didn't light so many candles. In honor of Hoshana Rabbah, they would light up the shul as though it were Yom Kippur, just like on Yom Kippur they light a lot of candles. So too on Hoshana Rabbah. Why? Says the tour. Lefisha b'chag nidonin alamayim. Because in Sukkis we get judged as to how much rain water we're going to have. We know every year we need rain, this year more than in other years. So the tour explains the reason is because we always look at how did you end off, right? If you give a speech, everyone remembers how you ended off. It could have been boring for 15 minutes, but if the last 5 were good, so people remember that. You could have been a good friend all year long, but then the last 3 days of the year, you weren't a good friend. That's what people will remember. So, akol olecha achitum. We have a rule, things always go after Hajj end off. So, Hoshana Rabbah is the conclusion of Chag, it's the conclusion of Sukkot. So, we need water, and that's why Hoshana Rabbah is the big day of Hoshanas. We say many Hoshanas. That's what the Torah writes. So, that seems to be very, very Pashut, right? You know, in the Beit HaMikdash, the Gemara tells us they used to surround the Mizbech every day, and on the seventh day they'd surround it 7 times. So we start seeing an indication that Hoshana Rabbah is connected to rain, to the judgment of rain, that this is the conclusion of rain. We know already, working backwards, we know from our custom that we say from Yom Kippur till Hoshana Rabbah, Pit Katava, you should have a good note. So we seem to indicate that there's still something going on in heaven with relation to all of us, something to do with notes, something until Hoshana Rabbah, our judgment isn't completely sealed. There's still something left to do up there. But in the tour, that's not what it says so far. The tour brings that we have a custom that we take in Arava in commemoration of the Beit HaMikdash, where they'd surround the Beit HaMikdash, they'd walk around with aravos, they'd have long aravos which they took around the Mizbech every day, and on Hoshana Rabbah they went around 7 times. And this is a minog that the Nevi'im instituted, that we do this with aravos. This goes back to the period of the beginning of Bait Sheni. The Nevi'im, in the last Nevi'im, Chagai, Zechariah, Malachi, they instituted this minhag. And there's a machlokas what they did with the aravos. Some say when it says chavata, it doesn't mean like we use in modern Hebrew lachvot, to hit, but chavata in ancient Hebrew meant to shake. That they'd shake the aravos just like you shake lo and esog. They'd shake them around in all directions. That's what Rashi says.
The aravos.
They're going to sell aravos tonight, tomorrow. You're going to buy 5 aravos. And some say that you hit the aravos. And these are 2 understandings in the Rishonim, what we're supposed to do. Today, everyone accepted the Arizal's opinion. You hit 5 times, and only 5 times, and only in a specific place in the Kaddish. But things weren't so clear once upon a time. There were different opinions among the Rishonim, and we today, everyone's accepted the Arizal, but basically in Halacha what's brought is that there's a very strong opinion, Rashi's opinion, that you take the Aravos and you shake them around. Now these are not the Aravos in your Lulav and Esrog. These are another set of Aravos which you will buy. They sell them. Oh, so how many Aravos? How many Aravos do you shake? So the here also there are different opinions. In the Rishonim you have different opinions how many Aravos you need. How many Aravos do you hold on to? Over here it says this. Where is it?
Would you say that we beat not et Aravos, but be Aravos?
Yeah. Okay.
Like, not hit Aravos.
Yeah.
Beat with Aravos. Beat with Aravos.
Okay. I am not finding it right now. And they're showing him it's brought. Where is it? I don't want to say if I don't see it. Okay, so let's see. What does it say in Shulchan Aruch? We just read the tour. Says the Shulchan Aruch, Siman Taf Reish Samech Dalet. On this day, you take in Arava, other than the Arava that you have in the Lulav. The custom is that the Shamish, the Gabai, all year long, he's taking care of everything. He would be the one that would sell the Aravos. Today you have all kinds of people selling them in street corners, but the ancient minhag, and where I grew up, they also kept this minhag, was that the Gabbai would do it, and this is a commemoration of the Beit HaMikdash, that in times of the Beit HaMikdash, the Chazan would be the one who would sell it, like the Gabbai in the Beit HaMikdash, so we do that in our shuls. And here we see a concept which the Chasam Sofer quotes often, halachically, that our shuls are a miniature of the Beit HaMikdash. Our shuls have to be a Mikdash mat, not only with respect to holiness, but also with respect to how we set up a shul. That's why the Chasam Sofer was adamant that the bima must remain in the center, that the bima corresponds to the mizbech, just like we surround the bima with oshanas, just like they surrounded the mizbech, and other things. He showed how these concepts, we build the shul in a correlation, corresponding to the way the Beit HaMikdash was built.
The place the bima is now in front.
Okay, so Chasam Sofer wasn't for this. The Arava, the Shulchan Aruch paskins, even if all you have is one leaf on one branch, that's enough. So it's not nice, but that's enough. So really, you have to know the minimum is one leaf on one branch. Fine, that's the minimum. We're no egg. We say, hey, you could get nice Aravos. It's not nice to take a withered branch with only one leaf. So take a nice branch. But really, technically, it doesn't have to be that. Now, the Mishnah Brewer says it's nice that ideally you should have at least three. Because there's an opinion in the Gemara that says you need three. So this way you're in fulfillment of that opinion that you have three branches. And the Arizal said you should have five. But you have to see how this halacha evolved. Technically, we saw you had one to the Aravos of the Lulav. There's an opinion that says three. To fulfill the opinion of Kabbalah, we do five. So today, it's very easy for us. You could go, there are Aravos trees all over. You just find someone who knows. They'll tell you where the Aravos trees you're allowed to pick from. You can't pick from an Aravos tree that you don't have permission to pick from. But what you should do is, after you bang the Aravos, take them and plant them in a cup of water till they sprout roots, and then you plant them in a pot. And after 2-3 years, you'll have a nice tree. Aravos are very, very easy plant to grow.
Roots,
all you need is to give it water.
Put in the water.
Aravos need a lot of water, but that's it. It grows and it conquers everything. Don't plant it near a house because it'll break through the foundations of the house. Uh-huh. Aravos trees develop strong roots and they can really destroy things. But and then you'll have your own Arava tree in a few years.
Could you put in a small pot first?
You could put it in a pot with water, or you could put it in a cup with water. Take off the leaves so the leaves don't sap up the water.
And then when they do,
and then stick it. And then when it has roots, put it in a pot, and keep giving it water. And then when it's strong enough, you can put it outside.
Wow.
Just make sure to keep watering it.
Oh,
etrogim you could also grow. This is a good climate here in Israel. I have a friend who did it in America, inside in the house under a skylight. So you could do it.
Can you do it this year with the Shemitah yet?
Oh, good question. I don't know.
Because I heard that you even cannot cook marmalade out of them this year because it's Kiddushah.
I don't know. That's it's a derech. I don't know.
I heard something.
I don't know. I don't know. Okay, I don't know. Okay, so what does the Shulchan Aruch tell us? On the seventh day, which is Hoshana Rabbah, that's the seventh day starting from the first day of Sukkot, we have many songs in Shul, like on Yom Tov, and the Ashkenazim, we don't say Nishmas. We say, like, Tzukei Dezimra of Yom Tov, but we do not conclude with Nishmas. And then when we take out the Sefer Torah, we say, in Kamocha, Shema Yisrael, as though we're Shabbos, when we take out the Sefer Torah. And when
about,
we
blessings before and after Shema, it's like in a regular day, or
yeah, like a regular day. Once you eat Yishtabach, it's like a regular day. And we light a lot of candles, and some people are careful to go to mikvah, and you'll see that the chazan wears a kittel. Some people wear a kittel like on Yom Kippur. They're white. The white clothing like on Yom Kippur, because now we are going to be judged over the water. And we untie the lulav on Hoshana Rabbah, and we'll go around seven times like we discussed. So here we're starting to see two things. On the one hand, the Shulchan Aruch gives us the reasoning because we get judged on water. He doesn't bring us the pitka tava about being judged for everything in our lives. He brings us the idea of being judged on water like we saw on the tour. But he does tell us that we're going to wear a kittel like Yom Kippur, but he says the reason is because we're being judged on the water. Says the Mishnah Brura, why do we wear a kittel? He doesn't tell us, like the Ramah says, some have the custom to wear a kittel like on Yom Kippur. He doesn't say more than that. Says the Mishnah Brura, because the conclusion of the sealing of Yom Kippur is on Hoshana Rabbah. I didn't say that in the tour. Didn't say that in the Shulchan Aruch, didn't say that in the Ramah. But that's what's been accepted, and we'll bring more quotes for that, more sources for that. The Magen Avraham says that, and the Gra says that, and many commentaries say that. It doesn't say it in the Shulchan Aruch. It doesn't say it in the Ramah, but it does say other things, which we'll see in a minute. Yeah?
That is judged by water means, as we know it, water is Torah.
So no.
The judging of how much Torah can gain.
Means water. Water. How much water will we have rain? We need it. What do you mean? We have a serious drought now. You need water. You want to eat fruits, vegetables, pizza, tomato sauce, everything you want. Flour, water. Everything we eat is contingent on the water.
Faucet.
Welcome to Israel. You don't know.
Okay, in Russia, I know.
Okay.
Anyway.
Yeah. I don't know. Here there's not enough
rain. The canal is so low. It may not get worse.
No.
Tada. They're very expensive and they're running out.
Now, we don't take the aravos from our lulav. We buy new aravos for Shanas. And now we go to later on in the Shulchan Aruch and it says like this. You're not supposed to step on the Oshanas, and you're not supposed to derive benefit from it. For all day, it's special for that mitzvah. And our custom is that we hide the Oshanos. We're going to use them for firewood to bake the matzahs, or to burn our chametz if we can't use them for the baking matzahs. Now, let's move down a little bit more. Where is it? The Hoshanas and the Lulav also, some have the custom. The Esrogim this year are holy, so we don't, we can't, we have to be careful what we do with them afterwards. Now, hold on to it, give it to someone who can eat it. There are people who like to eat it. The Esrogim are holy this year. You have to know how to cook it, how to make it edible, but yeah.
Can you take it abroad?
You should not take an esrog abroad, no. Now, some have the custom, when they leave the sukkah, they say, may it be the will of Hashem that we merit to sit in the sukkah of the Levyasan. You say, ultimately, Hashem will make us the special sukkah where we will all sit. And really, the mitzvah of sitting in sukkah concludes on Hoshana Rabbah. Simchas Torah, the last Yom Tov, Shemini Atzeres, the eighth day of Sukkot, technically we do not need to sit in a sukkah. But, here's the big but, in Chutzarts we always say, we're uncertain, is it this day or the day before? That's why we keep 2 days Yom Tov. So we say there's Shemini Atzeres and then Simchas Torah. Why do we have Shemini Atzeres and Simchas Torah? Because we say maybe the eighth day is the next day. Well, if the eighth day might be the next day, then day number 8 might be day number 7, right? If what we're saying is that day number 9, why do we have 9 days of Sukkot and Chutzar? It's because we say the second day Yom Tov, day number 9, might be day number 8. Well, in that case, day number 8 might be day number 7, which would mean that we're obligated to sit in the Sukkah. That's why in Chutzar, you're accustomed to sitting in the Sukkah on the 8th day on Shemini Atzeret. But technically, there's no mitzvah to sit in the Sukkah on the 8th day. Only in Chutzar, where we have to doubt whether day number 8 is really day number 7, do we have this custom. Now, let's say you want to leave your sukkah on Hoshana Rabbah. You finished using it. You sat in the afternoon, you had your last meal, you said goodbye to the sukkah, you said, may it be the will of Hashem, we sit in the sukkah of the Leviathan, and now you go inside, you're showering, you're getting ready to go to shul for Mincha Maariv. And you tell yourself, gee, it'll be very nice if I could sit out here on Yom Tov. So you're allowed to take off, you're allowed to take apart a little bit of the sukkah that you want to use. Otherwise, you only have to leave some of the sukkah erect that you'll be able to sit in should you need. Let's say you'll suddenly want to eat another meal. Let's say your neighbor will come over and say, hey, there's leftover pizza. You want to come join me for some pizza? You'll want to sit down for a meal. So you don't have to take off. No, we usually don't take apart the sukkah at all. We leave it till after Yom Tov and then we take it apart. But let's say you have some need. You're going to have a lot of guests and you want to sit in here and it's not convenient to sit this way. So really the ornaments and everything is mukta. You can't deal with it. Technically you have to be careful what you do and what you don't do. But we say if you need the space, you have to at least leave over a minimum of a sukkah should you need it for a meal. You should leave that much over. Now, give me 1 second.
Isn't there also something about that we all can fit in the sukkah? It teaches us like the sukkah and the Mashiach comes, teaches us something else. I can't remember if I learned that. I
don't know what you mean. No?
Somewhere that the house something
about. Give me just 1 second.
You learned pretty much.
The Ramah brings here like this. And after the Ramah we'll see other commentaries. Katvo Rishonim Zal, the earlier commentaries wrote, Sheyesh siman betzel alvana belel Hoshana Rabbah, that there's a sign with the shadow of the moon on the night of Hoshana Rabbah. And before a certain song that they say, Ana Ezonchin, it's a song that they say, as Ashkenazim we don't say it, but the Sfaridim say it. So before they say that, they go out and they look at their shadow in the moonlight, and you could tell by looking at the shadow whether a person will live out his year. So the that's a good idea. So now I'm out. Figure you guys might want to see this. My wife thought you might want to see it. Just so you know what kind of bug to look for in Pilta.
Good idea.
People think you're looking for all kinds of things. This is it's the primary worm that attacks a pepper. My wife thought you'd want to see it. It's a type of caterpillar.
Caterpillar, yes. It's from butterfly.
Now, in general, once we're on the topic.
What kind of caterpillar?
Sometimes they're bigger, by the way.
It's a lot of kinds. A lot of spices.
If you want to.
A lot of species.
He moves around. Right now he's standing. My wife says he was traveling around.
He's in shock.
Sleeping.
But sometimes they're bigger. Now, if I could just have the pepper, I'll show you one more thing. They say that sometimes what looks like dirt around here.
Oh, it's very nice. What in the speech?
I don't know. I had a
spell. Ornamentation. No, I
around around the stem over here. Sometimes it's sometimes you see like little brown spots around the stem. Sometimes it's dirt from the mud. Sometimes it's little bugs. So you should either clean it off or cut it off, the dirt around here. Does anyone want this caterpillar? You do. It's all yours. Together with the pepper, which I don't know if you should eat, unless you can really. Okay. Usually, if you find a worm in an apple, so you cut out the worm, you could eat the rest of the apple and just clean off the knife. Yeah. Which is not the din if you find a red spot in an egg. If you cooked an egg, and afterwards you peel the egg, so you have to discard the whole egg. You say, wait a second, is that brown? Is that red? Is that orange? We say, you don't know exactly what it is. You have to discard the whole egg. When you cook an egg and you peel it, and suddenly you see something that seems to be either brownish or reddish or orangish or some kind of color like that. We're not talking about the yolk, obviously. So then you have to assume there was a blood spot in that egg and discard the whole egg. But if you find a worm in an apple, so then you can just discard the worm and eat the rest of the apple. And now in Shemitah year, you should know that if you buy Otz or Bezen fruits, so then they don't use pesticides on it. So then you have many more worms in the apples. I mean, we found many worms in the apples the Shemitah year now. So you just have to be careful to slice up your apples well and look for the holes in the apples. Same thing with pomegranates this year. There were many wormy pomegranates. We
even
bought...
Even in pomegranates, eh?
Yeah. usually they use pesticides. Okay, coming back here.
Sorry.
Yeah.
For example, I cut it with pepper and I killed this animal.
Right. The knife is kosher, you should just clean it. The problem is that we say that if you slice something oily with a knife, you have to clean it very well. And the worm might be oily. So then you have to just make sure to clean off the knife well with some scrub and soap. And if the knife is a serrated knife, so then you have to be even more careful to make sure you got, if the knife, sometimes the knife is serrated, has edges. So then you have to make sure you got anything out of there. Like a saw, right. It's like a saw. Then you have to clean it especially well. Make sure you have nothing left in there. Okay. So there's this some kind of Kabbalistic sign that one looks at one's shadow in the moonlight and one can tell whether one will live out the year. So now we will move on to the Levush. The Levush was Rav Mordechai Yaffe. Before we move on to the Levush, just one second. The Ramah, as is his habit throughout the Shulchan Aruch, says, and there are those that say that you shouldn't worry about these signs because just the fact that you worry about it could harm you.
Yes, of course. It's for me, yes, it's terrible.
Because many people don't understand this well,
yeah.
And the Ramah concludes, the way he often concludes when discussing these type of things, the Ramah says,
yeah.
And it is better to be whole with God, not to try to figure out all kinds of things. And not to try and figure out what will be in the future. That's what I think, says the Rama.
What kind of sign is that?
Oh, what is the sign? There's some kind of tradition that they had, that if you look at your shadow in the moonlight, you can tell whether you will live out the year or you will die this year. You can tell by the sign, the shadow, and the moonlight. And because I see you guys like this very much, I figure we'll take another minute just to see a little bit more about the different traditions that we had about what could be done on Hoshana Rabbah by night. Because it seems that even though the Shulchan Aruch doesn't bring it and the Torah doesn't bring it, it seems there was a tradition that began before the Gra and before the Magen Avraham that tonight is the conclusion of the sealing of Yom Kippur. So first we'll begin with a commentary of the Chida's grandfather. He has a commentary on the Levush. And before we do that, we'll just introduce who was the Levush. The Levush was Rav Mordechai Yaffe. He was one of the great rabbis who lived approximately 600 years ago. He was a disciple, I don't remember if of the Ramah or of the Bach. I don't remember. But he was one of the early generations following the Shulchan Aruch. And he said, I will write a work that people will be able to learn this, and they'll know. He was a disciple of the Ramah. No, he was a disciple of the Ramah. He said, I will write a work that concludes everything that you need to know, all the introductions you need to know, because Shulchan Aruch doesn't give you many introductions. I'll give you the introductions that you might have had to look elsewhere for them. I'll make everything very organized, and you'll be able to learn my work and know everything you need to know. So he wrote on all Chalakim, all four portions of the Shulchan Aruch. And there's a story we have on tradition that his family name was Yafe, Rav Mordechai Yafe, that they were all very good-looking people. And that once a noble, a woman who was of the aristocracy, invited him as though she needed his counsel. And when he was in a closed room, so she told him, now you're going to sin with me. And he looked this way and he looked that way and he saw nowhere to run except for into a big basin that they had with all the feces, all the bathroom stuff they poured into that huge garbage bin. So he jumped into that, he jumped out the window and landed in that. And now that he was covered with all of that, she wasn't so interested in getting near him that minute. And when he arose in that bin covered with human feces, he looked up to the Rabbon Shalom and he said, I have such beautiful clothing. I have the clothing like Mordechai when he walked out from before the king. That the king, the Megillas Esther tells us the different clothing that the king gave him in honor of the fact that Mordechai was royalty. He was given royal clothing. We have a whole pasuk that discusses Mordechai yatzam milifnei hamelech. Mordechai went out from before the king, bilvush malchut, tchelet, vachur, vateret zahav gedula, vetachrichvutz, vargaman. The pasuk just enumerates the different garments he was given in honor of the fact that he was now part of the royal advisory committee. So the Rav Mordechai Yafe said, Ribon Shalom, thank you for saving me from that sin. And because you saved me from that sin, I vow I will write a book in your honor. And the book really goes according to this. The Anor HaChaim, it's called Levush Achur. The different, it's called the Levush. Levush Malchus, the clothing of royalty. That he wrote in honor of the fact that he was saved from that sin. And then he goes the different sections of the book. It's a work that has volumes like the Shulchan Aruch. And that's the Levush. It's known as the Levush, what Rav Mordechai Yafe wrote, because it has different garments. Each section is named after a different garment that Mordechai wore. Now, Rav Mordechai Yafe, that was his name. So,
and altogether it's called Levush Mordechai?
It's just called the Levush. Now, the commentary on the Levush were the Elyo Rabbe and the Elyo Zuto. Very often we see quotes in the Mishnah Brewer from the Elyo Rabbe and the Elyo Zuto. They were composed by the same person, Rav Eliyahu Shapira, and he wrote one longer work and one shorter work. So Rav Eliyahu Shapira called one Elia Rabba, the greater Elia, and Elia Zuta, the smaller Elia. And what we're going to read now, we'll read a little bit of what the Levush wrote, and we'll also see a little bit of the commentary of Rav Avram Azulai, the grandfather of the Chida. So, I'm with you, yeah. Oh, let's see. So let's see.
I think Agro and Rambam says that it's nothing.
That can work, because
it's Avodah Zarah.
Let's see, okay.
Well, it seems like from primitive religion, from door. It's like before Torah religion.
Won't
let us know that. That would break down the whole thing. Because people would be like, oh, I'm not going to pay that loan back. I'm going to die. I don't have to do. I don't know.
The Gemara says that Hashem would tell a person, Hashem just wouldn't tell him which day, when he would die. But, we find the Nevi'im that they said you're not going to live out your year. Oh, so let's see.
It's prohibition. Yes, in Torah it's against this asking for.
Let's see, one thing at a time.
For stars, for all this stuff.
So the Levush explains in the Ramah. Remember, the Levush was the Ramah's own disciple. So we said, maybe in the Ramah we see an inkling of this concept that tonight we get judged completely. But the Levush explains in the Ramah differently. He says, we add candles like on Yom Kippur, because on Chag we get judged for the water. what the Shulchan Aruch writes, that the whole reason of Hoshana Rabbah is because this is the culmination of our judgment. The Levush writes that in the Ramah as well, that the reason why we add all the candles and we make like on Yom Kippur is because we are judged on the water. He doesn't say because we're judged completely. And today is the end of the judgment of the water, and everything goes by the conclusion. And he says, and furthermore, I think the reason that this day has a greater value than other days is because Hoshana Rabbah, according to the order of the years and the Iburim, it's going to be like Yom Kippur. Now, I don't know what he means by that. He says, you know that the solar year is greater than the lunar years by 10 days, 21 hours, and 204 halakim. And then you could easily understand what I'm talking about. That if Rosh Hashanah would be on the first day of the Molad, the way it should be, then okay. It's a long discussion. Really, our whole calendar doesn't begin with Rosh Hashanah. We say the world was created long before Rosh Hashanah. We start the calculations now, Shnat Hachama. We say this year we make a blessing. In the middle of the year, we'll make a blessing that the sun and the moon are exactly the way they were at the time of creation. Why do we do that then? Why don't we do it on Rosh Hashanah? Because we say that the world was really created long before Rosh Hashanah. The solar system, conceptually, was created beforehand. The world was not created as though in the beginning of a season on Rosh Hashanah. The world was created in motion, like an older world. So we work our way back to the very beginning of the seasons, back in the time in the year of creation, and we know creation began before Rosh Hashanah. So he says if the season would only begin on Rosh Hashanah, then Hoshana Rabbah would be Yom Kippur. He works out a whole mathematical equation. Okay.
So how does that differ from the age of the world?
What?
So could the world be older than we count it?
The world, we say the world is a year older. That really, when we say that really Adam Arishon was created on Rosh Hashanah, but the world was created 6 days before Rosh Hashanah. And he, the Levush, the Ramah student, tells us, and here we see that this was already way back then, that we know, according to Kabbalah, that really on Hoshana Rabbah, Hashem concludes the sealing of our din. This is the first place I know of that it's written out, meaning there are allusions, but the Levush, which is just right after the Ramah, is the Ramah student, he says, we all know on tradition we have that on Hoshana Rabbah we get sealed in the din. This is the real conclusion of the din of Yom Kippur. And Hoshana Rabbah is like Yom Kippur, that we get forgiveness. And then again, he goes into the calculation. He says it has to do with the solar year and the lunar year and the way the things were, the way we work out the years.
I thought you said before that he only writes about the judgment on the water.
No. Initially, where the Ramah says it's like Yom Kippur, the Levush explains it's like Yom Kippur because we're judged about water. So you can't say that the Ramah meant it's like Yom Kippur because we're judged in general. Mm-hmm. About those words, the Levush explains because we're judged on water. And then he adds his own footnote and he says, just like we have in true Kabbalah, we have, those who know Kabbalah know that tonight we were completely sealed. Tonight is the conclusion of Yom Kippur. But that doesn't say in the Ramah. The Levush brings that as a known thing. The custom is that those that are modest go to Tovel and Mikveh early in the morning before prayer, just like on Erev Yom Kippur, we Tovel before Yom Kippur. Okay, and now we'll see the commentary over here on the bottom, the Chida's grandfather. And then we'll discuss it a little bit, because I see it's bothering everyone here. He quotes from a book, Mate Moshe. He says like this. Initially, the Rav Avraham Azulai, the Chida's grandfather, he says like this. Why is it that we're completely sealed on Hoshana Rabbah, not on Yom Kippur? So he says Yom Kippur is on the 10th of the month. And then you have 5 days till Sukkot, and then 6 days till Hoshana Rabbah. Hoshana Rabbah is always the 21st of the month. 21 squared is 441. Gematria of Emet. That's God's seal. So if God is going to seal us, He seals us on the root of Emet. What's the root, the square root of Emet? 441 is 21. That's 21. Just like we know, when Moshe Rabbeinu was coming to take out the Jewish people, what did God tell him? Take them out, they deserve it. Moshe Rabbeinu said, no, I'm a guy who goes with justice, I'm with Emet. Take him out with Chesed, take him out with my brother Aaron. God says, no, take him out with which name, God says, with Eheyeh Asher Eheyeh, I will be which I will be. Eheyeh is Gematria 21. Aleph is 1, He is 5, Yud is 10, He is 5, 21. God says, Eheyeh Asher Eheyeh. 21, we said, is Emet. God says, with Emet they deserve to go out, Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe, look, they have merits. There are certain things they're doing right. With Emet they deserve to go out. You, Moshe, could take them out with Din. They deserve to come out. So 21 is the root we find in the Torah also of God's seal, and that's why God seals us on Hoshana Rabbah, which is the root of Emet. That's what he says. Now, he says like this. He brings one tradition that if you take spring water in a clear glass vessel and you look at it on the night of Hoshana Rabbah, so then even if you close your mouth and your eyes, but you'll see the reflection as though your mouth and eyes are open. If you squint your eyes and you close your mouth and you look in the reflection, it'll look like they're open. But if it looks like they're closed, then he won't live out the year. Other people light candles on Yom Kippur and they look in the reflection of the oil, and if their eyes and mouths are shut, then they won't live out the year. And some people look at the reflection of the moon, and they say, if you're going to do that, he says, I heard from Mikubalim, sounds like he never tried it. He says, I heard from Mikubalim that you could only do it in the hours that the stars of the moon are ruling the night. And then you could really test it out. So you start seeing, wait a second, it's not always going to work. You can't just go up to the roof and look at your reflection of the moon. You have to know when to do it. Whenever we encounter these things, so I could tell you, on the one hand, he also quotes that Hoshana Rabbah is one of five mornings when every person should wake up early for davening. There are five mornings. Rosh Hashanah morning, Yom Kippur morning, Hoshana Rabbah morning, Purim in the morning, and every person should wake up early to shul. Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Hoshana Rabbah, Purim, and Tisha B'Av. Those are the five mornings that every Jew is supposed to be in shul early. That's what he quotes, and he quotes different sources for that. Now, if you want, I could tell you a story about a friend of mine whose grandfather was a Mekubal, and every Hoshana Rabbah by night, they'd sit down and eat together, and they'd give out eggs, and they'd give each person two eggs, and the Gemara in Pesachim brings that holy people are careful not to eat things that aren't theirs, so he would always slice each egg in half, and then he'd have four, and then he'd switch with his grandson the half so that he didn't have tears. And every night when everyone was saying the song, so the grandfather would climb up to the roof and the grandchildren would whisper that he's going to look at his shadow, and he'd come back and continue with everyone else. And then one year it was Hoshana, I heard it from the grandson himself. One year it was Hoshana Rabbah by night. They were sitting down to sing the songs of Hoshana Rabbah. The grandfather went up to the roof. He came down and he didn't seem too happy. They gave out the eggs and the grandson said, should I cut him? And he said, don't bother. And he didn't live out that year. So if you want, yeah, I can tell you stories. But at the same time, we have to know, like the Rama said, Tamim tiyem Hashem lokecha. We have to be whole with Hashem. We don't know how any of this stuff works. We know that the cures, it says in the Shas, we're not supposed to try. The medical cures... Our sages tell us they worked in their day. We don't even know what they mean. And even if we think we know what they mean, our nature is different. We live different lives than they did.
What do you think now about the people who are starting to say Ramadan? You think it's a bad idea to try?
Yeah, it's not. We don't know. I don't know what they're doing, but in general, we say we don't even understand. Like they sometimes tell us things and the smallest nuance of a difference could be a difference. We don't know when they talk about plants, the plants they talk about. When they talk about bread, their bread was baked differently than ours in different vessels than ours. Everything they had was different.
I mean, the cures that mentioned right. In Chazal.
The cures that are mentioned in Chazal, whatever they were talking about was different than ours. Our animals are eating different foods. Our plants are growing on different foods. I'm not even talking about the genetic altering. Talking about the fertilizer. Everything is different. Everything we do is different. Our schedules are different. We wake up... No, everyone's the same, but we wake up at different hours than they woke up. We go to sleep at different hours than they went to sleep. Our whole lives are different. The Gemara says, the Medrash says, who's a lazy person? That's a person who wakes up by sunrise. If you wake up by sunrise, that's a lazy bum.
When the pasuk. Not lazy.
Oh, but they were going to sleep shortly after sunset. They'd eat supper just before sunset. They'd finish supper and go to sleep. The Gemara says a rabbi shouldn't be walking out at night alone, because everyone's going to say, "Why is he walking around the night alone? Must be he's looking to pick up a girl." So a rabbi shouldn't walk around at night alone unless everyone knows that he's one of those rabbis that goes out every night, he has a set bath, he goes to the set base medrash, everyone knows where he's going. Otherwise, people are going to wonder, what's he doing out on the street at night alone? So you see people weren't out on the street. They prayed Alvit in the early evening on their way home from work. They pray Alvit early, before, just like the Sfardim do, just before Shkia. They'd make a minyan at the end of work for Mincha and Alvit. And we find in Chazal that they weren't there for Arvit usually. That's why in Simchat Torah, when we're going to switch to say Mashiv Ruach Morid HaGeshem, we do it on Musaf of the day. Why don't we do it at night? The day is going to begin tomorrow night. Because they said even on Yom Tov, a lot of people didn't show up to shul at night, even on Yom Tov. And in the morning, people showed up late. They said if we switch to Mashiv Ruach Morid HaGeshem by Shachris, there'll be quite a number of people that will miss it because they showed up late to shul. So they'd always switch in Musaf. But there's one thing that didn't change today, right? So, but you see, things changed. Our whole lives are different. So here you have something that's Kabbalistic. We don't know exactly what they meant. And we don't know how it works. And I wouldn't go up and check our shadow. For example, if you went up and checked your shadow in the moon and you saw a whole shadow, you'd be very happy. And yet, some say you have to take off all your clothing in the moonlight. And that's what they meant, to see your shadow. You wouldn't know that. So you wouldn't know how to check your shadow. There are many things. What are you looking for? The Gemara already says that if you want to testify that someone's dead, you have to see his shadow and the shadow of the shadow. Bevua de bevua. What does that mean? So no one knows exactly what it means. Some say when you stand in the sunlight, so you have the stronger shadow and then you have a weaker shadow, because the sun isn't directly overhead. Look at yourself in the sunlight, and you'll see there's a stronger shadow in one direction and a weaker shadow that's slightly at an angle from that. Some say that's what it means. Some say no. When you look at the shadow, there's the shadow, and then there's beyond the shadow, a slight outline beyond the shadow. Look in the sunlight and you'll see. And then others say, we don't know what it means. Chazal say, a demon could have a shadow, but it won't have a shadow of a shadow. Okay, so what does that mean? We don't know what it means. So even a simple shadow, we don't know what it means. So we see that we don't know exactly what these things mean. You're right in saying, wait a second, is this Jewish? If they didn't tell me it was Jewish, I would say the same thing, but they're telling me it is, so then it is. But what it means exactly and how it works, we don't know. And I think the motto that the Ramah tells us, Tamim Tiyeh, where our job is to be whole with Hashem, that I think is the safest, the most correct way to go. So we should know these things exist, and we should know that this isn't witchcraft, this isn't sorcery, this isn't pagan, this isn't something, some kind of belief that came from before the Torah. This is something that Chazal had on tradition, and obviously they knew, I mean, you're talking about intelligent people, people who were very, very religious, and they obviously knew that this was correct. This wasn't something that was idol worship. But when we deal with things like this, we should know that the border between idol worship and something that's kosher is very, very fine. When you look at the halachot of when is something called nichush, you know, the Torah tells us, don't be superstitious. When is something called superstition and when not? So you have things that commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch themselves say, we're not sure. Some say it's a problem, some say it isn't a problem, some say it makes sense, some say it doesn't make sense. We don't know exactly how these things work. So, Tamim Tiyem, Hashem Nakecha, we'll go with the Ramah.
About 15 years ago, one friend said, for my friend, by hand,